You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be speaking in Phoenix pretty soon. I guess the main event is December the 10th. It's over a weekend, December the 9th, 10th, and 11th. It's called Campaign USA, presented by the Foundation of America, a mainstream political forum addressing the important issues that affect us all. Main event, December 10th, 1994, from 2 p.m. until 8 p.m. at the Mesa Amphitheater, 210 North Center Street, Mesa, Arizona. That's 210 North Center Street, Mesa, Arizona. And for information, call the Foundation of America at 1-800-REFOUND, spelled R-E-F-O-U-N-D. 1-800-REFOUND. Easy to remember, folks. The guest speakers, remember, folks, I'm not presenting this. I have nothing to do with who's invited. I'm just going to speak because there's going to be a lot of people there who need to hear what I have to say. And, of course, you know me. I'm going to say it. Red Beckman will be there. Mr. Beckman is a highly respected author, speaker, and researcher who for many years has championed the importance of the Constitution, and in his book, which you should all read, entitled The Law That Never Was, he proves the 16th Amendment was never properly ratified. He's going to be discussing those fundamental principles upon which this nation was founded so that you can discover what's great about America, if you don't already know. Dr. Gene Schroeder will be there. Dr. Schroeder is a driving force for the American agricultural movement, and he's going to present a precise and powerful overview of perhaps the most shocking legislative events in our nation's history. Learn how Franklin Delano Roosevelt used the war and emergency powers to undermine the Constitution and enslave the American people. And John B. Nelson is going to be there. Now, I hold Mr. Nelson in very, very high esteem. In fact, one of his research papers is included in our set of treason documents to show you the foundation upon which the cornerstones of the nation were pulled out from under us. John B. Nelson. If you don't go for any other reason, folks, go to listen to John B. Nelson. I can hammer that in your head if you want me to, but I better not. Mr. Nelson is the undisputed authority in the area of natural law and how it applies to the formation of governments and communities. He holds the title of General Advocate Liaison and is working directly with the Kingdom of Hawaii. His unrivaled legal research clearly documents how the power of the government was used to impair our nation, and he lays the foundation of the treason that has taken place. John Nelson will reveal exactly what it means to be a citizen and how you, the people, can enforce your rights and reinstate our limited constitutional government. And you all know me. I'll be there, too. And last, Jack McClam. Jack McClam will be there. Also, Carl Klang will be there. He'll be performing all of his songs, which you've heard on this broadcast and many others. Advance tickets are $15, folks. Get advance tickets because if you wait and pay at the door, it's going to cost you another $5. It'll be $20 at the door. $15 advance tickets, $20 at the door. Now, For more information, call 1-800-REFOUND. That's December the 10th, 1994, in Mesa, Arizona, which is just a suburb of Phoenix. The people in Mesa won't like me to say that because to them it's a separate city, but it's like L.A. Phoenix, Mesa, and Tempe are all just run together, and several other little towns, too. So it's at 210 North Center Street, Mesa, Arizona, at the Mesa Amphitheater, 2 p.m. until 8 p.m., December the 10th, 1994. Don't miss it, folks. And if for no other reason, go to hear John Nelson speak. I think that event alone will make your trip more than worthwhile. You'll be very happy to hear him speak. Okay. Now, after our broadcast last night, I have a prediction to make, folks. I predict those people in Montana will not do what is suggested and change their leadership and get in line with the rest of the nation. What I predict that they will do is mount a very vicious personal attack against me. And don't worry about me, folks. I can take care of myself. They have no idea what they're getting themselves in for if they take that route. But that's the kind of people that I perceive them to be. It's happened to me many times in the past. Therefore, I think I'm very safe in making that prediction. And if that happens, we'll get all the material and whatever they say, and we'll air it on this program. Whatever they say, wherever they say it, I'll air it on this program, and then I'll tell you the truth about the matter, whatever it is that they're going to do. But I predict that that's exactly what will happen and what will come from the mouths of the militia of Montana. They will not straighten up. They will not make themselves better. They will not change their leadership. Instead, they will prove that they are exactly what I said they were last night, and they will mount a vicious personal attack against me instead of dealing with the facts that were presented and dealing with the lies that they've spread across this country. That is exactly what those people are going to do. Don't go away, folks. I'll be right back, and we'll start hour three of our expose of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, a branch of the southern jurisdiction of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry.
Never in human history has so few taken so much from so many as America's Illuminati and their warlords of Wall Street and Washington. In just 8 years, these banksters and international government gangsters took us from the greatest creditor nation to the largest debtor nation on earth. Our standard of living has dropped like a rock for 4 out of every 5 Americans. They have foreclosed on our homes, our farms, our factories. They've exported your jobs and surrendered our arms. A new world order. A new world order. A new world order. A new world order. The Illuminati wants you to be a slave from birth to grave. The banksters own the Federal Reserve. It's private. They own it. It's neither federal nor a reserve. The cashists make that fiat funny money stuff you call dollars for 2 pennies. They lend it back to us at full face value. Then charge you interest. Do you get the debt? They get the interest. They get the gold.
You get the shop.
That's right. They want it all. They get the money. You get the shaft. Don't ever forget that, folks. That's the way it's been for hundreds of years, thousands probably. Information in tonight's broadcast comes from The Ugly Truth About the ADL, a report published by the Executive Intelligence Review, from Dope Incorporated, published by the editors of the Executive Intelligence Review, from the research of the Citizens Agency for Joint Intelligence, and, of course, the premier organization, the Intelligence Service. Recently, the San Francisco Chronicle, ladies and gentlemen, shocked the nation with the revelation that the office of the Anti-Defamation League in San Francisco was at the center of a scandal involving a San Francisco police officer and a Bay Area art dealer, self-described Private Eye, who were suspected of selling illegally obtained information to agents of the South African government. This scandal quickly spread across the nation as it became evident that this was not the only or the first, nor does it appear that it will be the last incident of the ADL spying upon American citizens, groups, organizations, churches, and, as you will see, many others. The two men, Sergeant Tom Girard of the San Francisco Police Department and Roy Bullock, a longtime paid undercover operative for the local office of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, had been under Federal Bureau of Investigation scrutiny since 1990 when federal agents discovered that secret bureau records on American black Muslims had been obtained by South African spies. The trail pointed to Bullock, who, in addition to his full-time paid work for the ADL, had been moonlighting as an undercover snitch for the Bureau. And on at least one occasion, Bullock received a $500 cash payment from the FBI for infiltrating meetings of two Bay Area groups. Bullock, you see, had access to confidential Bureau files and became a suspect when FBI files showed up in the hands of the South African government at the very same time he was regularly meeting with two South African spies and passing confidential data to them. Bullock received cash payments that eventually totaled over $16,000. The early meetings between Bullock and the two South African agents, identified as Humphreys and Louis, included policeman Girard. Later, Bullock would meet with the South Africans alone. According to one version of the Bullock South Africa story, it was Anti-Defamation League officials who put him in touch with the foreign agents. Nearly 3 years later, the FBI probe of South African spying mushroomed into one of the biggest espionage scandals in many years, and the center of the scandal shifted from cops and art dealers to an alleged command center. The central target became the Anti-Defamation League. On April 1, 1993, San Francisco Assistant District Attorney John Dwyer told reporters, and I quote, "The ADL is the target. Their involvement is just so great. People have called this the Girard case. Now it's the ADL case. Girard is just their guy in San Francisco. The ADL is doing the same thing all over the country. There is evidence that the ADL had police agents in other cities. The case just gets bigger every day. The more we look, the more we find people involved," end quote. The San Francisco probe soon proved that the profile of the ADL contained in this broadcast is right on the mark. Far from living up to its thoroughly undeserved and self-promoted reputation, the Anti-Defamation League has been caught by San Francisco police investigators, one, illegally spying on at least 950 political organizations, including the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP, the Rainbow Coalition, Greenpeace, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, the United Auto Workers, the Christic Institute, New Jewish Agenda, Operation Rescue, the Liberty Lobby, the Nation of Islam, the United Farm Workers, ACT UP, the American Civil Liberties Union, the National Lawyers Guild, the Bogreitz Presidential Campaign, the political movement led by Lyndon LaRouche, and the Citizens Agency for Joint Intelligence. 2, infiltrating countless police and sheriff departments across the country, bribing police officers, and illegally obtaining classified government data on at least 20,000 American citizens. 3, selling information on anti-apartheid groups to agents of the South African government. 4, passing surveillance and classified police data on Arab Americans to Israeli authorities, who then used the ADL data to illegally detain American citizens visiting Israel. 5, passing off Israeli intelligence propaganda as Anti-Defamation League generated research in an effort to sway American public opinion and government policy while never being forced to register as foreign agents and while even enjoying tax-exempt status with the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS. The San Francisco District Attorney and police investigators, ladies and gentlemen, have concluded that the pattern of illegal spying that they unearthed in California is but a small part of a large nationwide spy operation run centrally out of the Anti-Defamation League's national headquarters in New York City under the direction of its fact-finding director, Irwin Sewell, who is a member of the Marxist Socialist Internationale. In the San Francisco probe alone, police uncovered evidence that the ADL had illegally penetrated 20 different police agencies in California alone and had also gained access to classified police files in Chicago, St. Louis, Atlanta, and a half dozen other cities across the nation. On April 8, 1993, San Francisco police released nearly 800 pages of documents providing previously classified details of the Anti-Defamation League's nationwide criminal operations. Those documents were released as attachments to a search warrant affidavit, which police executed the same day. In raids on the San Francisco and Los Angeles offices of the Anti-Defamation League, police obtained a mountain of new evidence of the spying and agent provocateur operations of the League. The April 8th search warrant actions, which garnered financial records and internal ADL correspondence between Sewell and West Coast regional ADL officials, were the second raids on Anti-Defamation League offices in but 4 months. On December 10, 1992, San Francisco police raided the San Francisco and Los Angeles ADL offices as well as the residences of Bullock and Girard. Now, shortly after the April raids and document disclosures, the Anti-Defamation League launched what local San Francisco newspapers labeled a massive damage control effort. They sent out several delegations of national officials from New York and Washington, D.C. to try to derail the probe. Leading these delegations were Anti-Defamation League National Chairman Melvin Salberg, ADL Executive Director Abraham Foxman, who is now the head of the ADL, and ADL General Counsel Barbara Wall of the Washington, D.C. law firm of Arent Fox. In San Francisco, Richard Goldman, the city's chief of protocol and a longtime Anti-Defamation League ally, was caught arm-twisting Chief of Police Tony Ribera into bringing the investigation to a halt. Now, although the city's police commission did bend to the ADL pressure and dropped its own probe of the league's interference in local police operations, District Attorney Arlo Smith vowed to continue his criminal investigation despite the pressure and subsequently identified the ADL's National Fact-Finding Director Sewell as a prime target. In behind-closed-door meetings with publishers, editors, and reporters from the Los Angeles Times, the Anti-Defamation League tried to silence the press through cajoling, arm-twisting, and not so very subtle allegations of anti-Semitism, their old fallback main battery weapon. But the ADL-run Jewish Weekly, called the Heritage Southwest Jewish Press, more openly expressed the ADL's true feelings about the probe. Publisher Herb Brin just returned from a trip to Belgrade, Serbia, where he gave his unabashed editorial endorsement to the Serbian slaughter of Bosnian Muslims and Croats, wrote on April 16th. Lyndon LaRouche, from his federal prison cell, must be gloating. Calypso Jean Farrakhan is singing away at the chagrin of Anti-Defamation League. These, among a host of skinheads, pinkos, and nuts, are dancing because San Francisco cops are on a vicious hunt to embarrass the Anti-Defamation League for doing what ADL has always done and must do to serve mankind after Hitler. And the bastard decision by some idiotic editors of the Los Angeles Times to play into the game, and Heritage will find out what prompted the malicious hunt into the fact-finding efforts of ADL, better believe it, speaks for itself as the Times played the trumped-up ADL investigated story on page one on Good Friday. Hardly a week passes that I don't supply Jewish defense material to David Lehrer, head of ADL in this region. A people must have the will and moxie to defend themselves. And that, to me, is what ADL is all about. The San Francisco police charge that ADL maintains political intelligence operations in some seven U.S. cities, in which case I say hooray for ADL. It also, ladies and gentlemen, says an awful lot about the Jewish motto, Holocaust never again. Remember, this man, ladies and gentlemen, was in Serbia to give his endorsement to the slaughter of Bosnian Muslims and Croats. And he continued here. Brin, a promoter of the terrorist Jewish Defense League, and gutter-level Anti-Defamation League snitch for 40 years, was openly threatening revenge. Now, soon after Brin's diatribe, some local news outlets experienced nastier treatment than the name-calling directed against the Los Angeles Times. KPOO-FM, a local black community radio station in the Bay Area, began receiving threatening calls after they aired a series of interviews with victims of Anti-Defamation League spying. The calls, left messages, are flatly stated to those who answered the phones the following remarks, quote, Jew-hating nigger, end quote, quote, nigger-Nazi, end quote, and other similar epithets bombarded the station's phone lines. In the past, these kinds of Anti-Defamation League hooligan tactics never failed to work. This time, however, the sheer weight of evidence has made this one scandal too big to bury. And every time they've tried it with William Cooper, the Citizens Agency for Joint Intelligence, the Intelligence Service, or the Hour of the Time, it has never worked and never will. These kinds of hooligan tactics have destroyed honorable, good citizens of this country in the past. By late April, after police publicly released the inventory of documents seized from the Anti-Defamation League, the League's fact-finding director, and also, as I have stated in the past, member of the Marxist International Socialist, or Socialist International, I should say, Irwin Sewell, hired a top criminal defense lawyer in San Francisco, the clearest signal yet that the ADL is shaking over the idea that at long last they got caught in the act of just being themselves. David Gervitz was a man who was very unhappy about his pay from the ADL as the League's chief fact finder in their Los Angeles office. The 35-year-old Gervitz was married with one child. He had a second one on the way. His full-time job at the ADL paid him slightly more than $20,000 a year, barely enough to live on in a high-cost town like Los Angeles. So in June 1992, Gervitz went to the Los Angeles Simon Wiesenthal Center, another Jewish group involved in monitoring the activities of so-called hate groups, to ask them for a better-paying job. Unfortunately, the Wiesenthal Center already had a full-time staff researcher, Rick Eaton, and Gervitz was given the brush-off by Wiesenthal Center director Rabbi Cooper. No relation. Gervitz's response to the job rejection was typical Anti-Defamation League. He staked out the Wiesenthal Center to get Eaton's car license, plate number, and passed the plate number to his ADL counterpart in San Francisco, Roy Bullitt. Gervitz would later tell San Francisco police and FBI investigators that Bullock was his mentor. Bullock contacted Sergeant Tom Girard and had Girard get Eaton's California Department of Motor Vehicles record. The state of California has very strict laws, ladies and gentlemen, prohibiting private citizens from possessing DMV records. Those records contain photographs, addresses, social security numbers, fingerprints, and other sensitive personal data. Unauthorized possession of even one DMV record is a felony punishable by a stiff fine and a five-year term in a California state prison. When Gervitz got Bullock and Girard to obtain Eaton's DMV record, all three were committing a serious state crime. But that has never bothered the ADL. When police raided the home office of Roy Bullock on December the 10th, they found far more than the Eaton records. They found DMV records on more than 1,300 Californians in a computer spy base, which included data on 12,000 individuals and 950 political groups. Among the files in the Bullock computer were the DMV records of nearly one-third of the membership of the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee, called AADC. It's a nationwide Arab American organization involved in legitimate political activities. And for years, leaders and offices of the AADC have been the targets of threats of violence. In 1985, Jewish Defense League terrorists, that's right, folks, terrorists, carried out bomb attacks against AADC offices in Santa Ana, California, Washington, D.C., and Boston, Massachusetts. In the Santa Ana attack, Regional Director Alex Oda was killed. Anti-Defamation League agent Bullock has admitted to police interviewers that he had infiltrated the AADC and personally had a key to its Santa Ana office at the time of the Oda murder. The Gervitz-Bullock efforts against Eaton did not stop with the illegal spying. Next, to intimidate Eaton, Gervitz asked Bullock to contact a leading member of the White Aryan Resistance, known as WAR, a West Coast-based white supremacist organization. The WAR leader, whose ADL code name was appropriately Scumbag, is a convicted felon and an undercover agent provocateur on the payroll of the Anti-Defamation League and the Treasury Department's Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, known as the BATF, the perpetrators of the Waco massacre. Scumbag had been regularly meeting with Bullock and San Francisco BATF agents, providing inside information about WAR. Through this channel, Bullock and the ADL apparently maintained wiretaps on the WAR phone, codenaming the effort Operation Eavesdrop.
For these I am, we remember thee.
Ladies and gentlemen, the hour of the time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. Our sponsors specialize in hard assets, precious metals in their various forms. The only commodity known to the human race that has never lost its value throughout the centuries and the millennia. In fact, as I've told you before, you can buy the same numbers of bushels of wheat with 1 ounce of gold today that you could 1,000 years ago, or 500 years ago, or 1,500 years ago, or just 50 years ago. Now, when I recommend our sponsors to you, it's to protect your assets against the declining value of the dollar and the economic collapse that is sure to come. Just recently, in fact, the other day, William Clinton made this statement. The world economic system is not working properly. We need to implement a new world economic system that will benefit all Americans. Now, what do you suppose is going to happen if and when he is successful, or his successor is successful in implementing his new world economic system? And by the way, this is exactly the same proposal made by George Bush, a Republican. And you think you've done something by switching one set of rascals for another? Not so, folks. Not so. The leadership of the Republican Party is already talking about the new order. And if you don't believe me, listen carefully on C-SPAN and CNN and on all the programs that they frequent. And if you're not used to doing that, you'd better start. You need the services of Swiss America Trading. They're honest. They have a buyback program, and I back them with my own personal guarantee. They tape everything so that they can't come back and say they didn't say something that they did, and you can't come back and say they said something that they didn't. Everything's recorded. It's above board. Craig Smith, the owner and president of Swiss America Trading, is one of the most honest, caring men that I've ever met in my life. And over the 2 years that they've sponsored the Hour of the Time, we've become very good friends. So you're in good hands with Swiss America Trading, and you need their services. You need their services now, because, folks, we have no idea when this collapse will take place. We just know that it's sure to come. You see, one of the goals of international socialism, and it matters not whether it's Democrats or Republicans, the end result will be a one-world totalitarian socialist government unless we can stop it. The end result of socialism is a redistribution of wealth amongst all people, which means the middle class in this country, which socialists call the bourgeoisie, must be destroyed. And if you're caught with your pants down, if you haven't taken steps to protect what you have in the form of some kind of easily transportable commodity that everyone recognizes as money, that has a set, easily calculated value, then you're going to be in big trouble. Call Swiss America Trading right now, 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Do it now, folks. Get the load off your back. You'll feel better. You'll rest easier. You'll sleep peacefully. And your loved ones won't have anything to worry about. 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You know, we all tend to procrastinate, and you cannot afford that in this day and age. 1-800-289-2646. Ask them for their recommendations. And if you have a plan, tell them your plan. They'll help you make it a reality. This is fun, folks. You see, the ADL has people around the country who listen to radio talk shows whenever they hear anything about the ADL or any other organization that they don't want known to the public. They begin calling. And if you answer the phone, they start screaming anti-Semite, Nazi, Jew hater, and all this other kind of stuff, which is not true at all. This isn't about Jews. It's about the Anti-Defamation League, a criminal organization which manipulates Jews and everybody else. That's what it's about. So when they call, when I do these programs and the phone just rings off the hook, I just engage their phone line and leave it engaged so it runs up their phone bill for about 10 minutes and then I just click it right off. And they've never caught on to that. They keep doing it all the time. Every time that I do a broadcast on the ADL, the phone rings off the hook. And we just engage their line and leave it engaged for about 10 minutes, and then we cut them loose. And when they get their phone bill, they're standing there scratching their head, wondering what happened, because they're not smart enough to understand that they're not the only ones in the world that have any brains. Too bad. The case of Scumbag, folks, opens questions on another level of criminal activity. Receipt of federal confidential records. You see, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms had offered to share the infiltrator Scumbag if the ADL would pay informant fees, some several hundred dollars a week. The money for Scumbag was approved by the ADL's chief fact finder, Irwin Sewell, from the League's national headquarters in New York City. So, when in the fall of 1992, Bullock contacted Scumbag and gave him details about Rick Eaton's efforts to infiltrate and spy on war, it was a textbook dirty trick. Bullock hoped to enhance Scumbag's position within the war group by having him expose the infiltrator Eaton. You see how they double-cross their own people? The ADL would gain greater hands-on control over the group through its own informant. Bullock also hoped that war might take some kind of action against Eaton that would scare him into leaving his job with the Wiesenthal Center, opening the position for Gervitz. There was only one problem. You see, apparently, unbeknownst to Bullock, the FBI was tapping his phone as part of the South Africa espionage probe. His conversations with Gerard, Gervitz, and Scumbag were all being recorded. The FBI had no choice but to warn Eaton at the Wiesenthal Center about a possible physical attack against him by war. According to documents released by the San Francisco police, the FBI could not rule out an actual assassination attempt against Eaton. FBI agents also went to the Los Angeles ADL office in October 1992 to alert them to the Gervitz Bullock dirty trick. The ADL response was striking. Gervitz was fired upon the spot. Despite his family financial problems and pregnant wife. Only employed by the ADL for 4 years, Gervitz, you see, was expendable. They have no loyalties whatsoever. Bullock, however, a 40-year employee of the ADL, was too valuable to fire. He knew too much, otherwise he would have been gone with the boot just as quickly. At that very moment, Bullock, just caught running a possible assassination through white Aryan resistance, was in Germany as part of a high-level ADL delegation meeting with the government officials and top German law enforcement to peddle their credentials as experts on extremist groups. You see how they manipulated their own people? An organization that says it exists to protect Jews from slander and libel and hate groups sacrifices Jews in the process of committing illegal and criminal acts and in the process of spying on American citizens and groups for foreign nations. And they manipulated the white Aryan resistance to do their bidding. And you all think you're so secure and so smart in what you do. You're manipulated by so many groups, organizations, governments, and people on a daily basis, you have no idea the extent of it. One of the ways that you serve their bidding is to hate each other and fight amongst each other while they are busily going about the business of putting the chains upon the legs of all of us. Most of you aren't smart enough to figure that out. Nope, you have to be better than everybody else. You have to be the chosen people. Or the superior race. Or because you're in a secret society and someone has conned you with a bunch of bullshit, you think you have the only truly mature minds. Or your religion is better than everybody else's. And I could go on and on and on. The truth of the matter can be stated in one word. Fools. Bullock personally met with the head of the German Constitutional Protection Office, Germany's equivalent of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, to receive and pass on information about United States skinhead and neo-Nazi activities. Needless to say, Bullock did not report on his own role in running agents' provocateurs inside those very circles. When Bullock did return to San Francisco and the prospect of being dumped for his antics with war, he did not lose his job. Irwin Sewell, the chief dirty trickster for the Anti-Defamation League, his Washington, D.C. aide, Myra Lansky, that is, Myra Lansky Boland, David Lear, the head of the ADL's Los Angeles office, and Rick Hershot, the league's San Francisco director, all threatened to quit on the spot if any action were taken against Bullock. You see, he knew too much. He could bring them all down. Sewell even wrote a memo which police uncovered in their searches of the San Francisco ADL office, lauding Bullock as the ADL's number one investigator. The impromptu rally in support of Bullock by top ADL officials speaks volumes about the real nature of the Anti-Defamation League Bullock's dirty tricks with war were not restricted to the targeting of Eaton. Bullock regularly tried to recruit white supremacists, KKKers, and others from the radical racist right to join AADC and other Arab American groups in order to later expose those groups for their alleged anti-Semitic ties. Usually, by submitting a plan to these groups through Jewish ADL agents to commit some atrocious violent act, which these stupid people usually did. Eaton wasn't the only Jewish activist, ladies and gentlemen, targeted by the ADL. Stuart Alpert, a national leader of the New Jewish Agenda, and other members of the group were ADL targets. Vera Katz, the mayor of Portland, Oregon, who lived for years in a kibbutz in Israel, discovered that her sister city program was spied upon by the ADL. You see, the ADL has no allegiance to Jews, despite what they preach. They manipulate Jews and use them in their efforts to bring about the New World Order. The ADL, in reality, obeys only their British masters. Shortly after the Eaton affair, ladies and gentlemen, the FBI asked the San Francisco police to take charge of the probe of Bullock and Girard. Once the investigation had turned into a probe of the ADL, the Bureau ran up against a very embarrassing dilemma. The most serious was the record of FBI collusion with the Anti-Defamation League. On February the 4th, 1985, then-director of the FBI, William Webster, wrote a priority cable to the special agents in charge of the FBI's 25 largest field offices, ordering them to establish permanent local liaison to the ADL. The Webster order coincided with a major effort by the Anti-Defamation League to solicit a federal prosecution of Mr. Lyndon LaRouche, a long-standing target of ADL spying and dirty tricks. Ironically, this FBI order came precisely when the Jewish underground, which FBI Director Webster later identified as the number one terrorist threat in the United States, was on a terrorist spree that covered New York, New Jersey, and California. Terrorist activities had left two people dead, including Alex Oda, the American Arab leader. By December 10th, 1986, documents obtained under the Freedom of Information Act showed Anti-Defamation League National Director Nathan Perlmutter writing to Webster to work details for the ADL to give annual training lectures at the FBI Academy in Quantico, Virginia, on, and I quote, directly from the FBI files, hate crimes, end quote. On November 21, 1989, Thomas F. Jones, Deputy Assistant Director of the FBI in charge of the Criminal Investigations Division, wrote to Irwin Sewell to invite Sewell and his ADL associates, Alan Schwartz and Michael Lieberman, to lecture the top 50 FBI agents on, quote, civil rights law, end quote. The marriage between the FBI and the Anti-Defamation League since February 1985 raises many serious questions of legality. Was the ADL handed authority to run a revised parallel COINTELPRO program after the United States Congress had essentially outlawed the FBI spying on non-criminal political groups in 1975? That's exactly what it was, ladies and gentlemen. The ADL's intimate ties to the Treasury Department's Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms ring similar alarm bells. When the San Francisco Anti-Defamation League office was caught in possession of dozens of police intelligence reports on skinheads prepared by the Portland police, ADL Northwest Regional Director Marvin Stern told reporter Phil Stanford that perhaps the files show ADL's, quote, work for the government, end quote. Under the Reagan administration's Executive Order 12333, which spelled out guidelines for domestic and foreign spying, The FBI was given broad latitude to use non-government personnel as, quote, assets, end quote. No wonder the FBI dropped the probe of Bullock Gerard on the grounds that it might jeopardize FBI secrets, methods, and procedures. Can you imagine, ladies and gentlemen, if all of this dirt had come out in the court records? What a shock that would have been. With the Bullock Gerard case in its hands, the San Francisco police launched an ambitious investigation late last year under the supervision of Captain John Willis, head of the Special Investigations Division. On November 1992, shortly after being interviewed by the FBI, Tom Gerard fled to the Philippines, which has no extradition treaty with the United States. From his retreat on a remote Filipino island, Gerard formally submitted his resignation from the San Francisco Police Department. Ironically, Gerard's very last assignment was in the Special Intelligence Division offices. That's the division that was later broken up due to its own illegal and criminal activity. You see, some people in this country have a feeling that there are more criminals in the police departments than there are on the streets. And occasionally, that proves to be exactly the case. On January 22, 1993, Gerard told the San Francisco Examiner from the Philippines that he had first met Bullock at the San Francisco Anti-Defamation League office in 1985. And he said this, quote, "We sat there one morning with everyone in the office, shook hands, and made friends," end quote. Gerard freely admitted he funneled classified police data to Bullock with the full understanding that it was for the ADL. And he said, quote, "The guy had no criminal record. It's like we're talking to someone in the neighborhood community watch organization," end quote. Gerard had just returned to the San Francisco Police Department after a two-year leave of absence in which he worked for the Central Intelligence Agency, ostensibly as a bomb expert. You see how these organizations interlock exactly as I said they did over 4 years ago in my book entitled Behold a Pale Horse. Many people said I was wrong. Folks, I've only been wrong once so far. And that's when I said Manuel Noriega would not be found guilty in a court of law in the United States and would not spend any time in prison, because we had no authority under international law to do so. He was the president of a foreign government. He was taken prisoner after we illegally invaded his nation. But I was wrong. I had no idea that the New World Order was so far in its advanced stages. And neither do you. According to documents and interviews, Gerard's Central Intelligence Agency assignments included El Salvador, Afghanistan, and a covert operation targeted at the African nation of Ghana. On his return to the police department, Gerard frequently boasted to his colleagues that he was also working closely with the Israeli Mossad. In retrospect, the references to Mossad may have been based on his budding relationship with the Anti-Defamation League, which has done much work for the Israeli Mossad. Gerard's work, ladies and gentlemen, did not go unrewarded. In May 1991, Gerard was one of 11 police officials from across this nation who traveled to Israel on an all-expense-paid ADL junket. The group's escort was Myra Lansky Boland, the ADL's Washington, D.C. fact-finder who personally put the delegation together. Sergeant Tim Carroll, a detective with the San Diego County Sheriff's Department, described the journey as a payment for services already rendered to the ADL, and that should tell you who and what he is. He says, quote, "A lot of it was for past work or relationship with the ADL, and kind of an emotional thing that we spread the word when we get back," end quote. so that others can be ensnared in this web. Police officers from Boston, Washington, Mobile, Dallas, Maryland, Virginia, and Georgia also went along in the junket, which featured meetings with senior Israeli police, military, and intelligence officials. One junket participant, Donald Moore, was subsequently indicted on kidnapping conspiracy charges. When on behalf of the Cult Awareness Network, he joined in a plot to kidnap a DuPont family heir, Louis DuPont Smith, a close associate of the LaRouche organization. When Moore was arraigned in late September 1992, his attorney, Mark Rash, was from the ADL's law firm. Myra Lansky Boland was in court throughout most of the trial, representing the Anti-Defamation League. In taped conversations with the FBI's undercover informant inside the kidnap conspiracy, Moore boasted that he had worked closely with the Anti-Defamation League against LaRouche and that as a deputy sheriff in Loudoun County, Virginia, he had conducted illegal wiretaps, break-ins, and other crimes against the LaRouche group. Though Moore was acquitted, his co-defendant, Galen Kelly, was convicted of federal kidnapping charges in May 1993. Good night. Wake up, if you can do that, and have a good night, and God bless you all.
All of a sudden, in the middle of the night, there's a loud knock on your door.
Hey, honey. Something's not right.
Pull out your arms.
And I'm from the IRS with a power to tax. If you've got a complaint, say you're the tax.
Get out of this house. Surrender your charges. Give me your guns. You better obey if you want to hold. As for this, I'll make deep with your toes.
Hillary Salala, Reno Janet Dyke, reading the words of General Albert Pike, the moneyed founder of the Ku Klux Klan, engineer of the Masonic Master Plan. Pike said Lucifer is God across this land. And Clinton saying hit the mark.
Don't miss tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen, as we continue our expose of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. Don't miss one moment of the Hour of the Time, the last bastion of truth on radio anywhere in the world.
Order out of chaos, depression, inflation, create the panic and rape the nation. Order. Crisis creation. Incite black and white. Program agitation.
Well,
we're all dancing with the drums of uproar, right? Clinton's preparing it for another huge hack. Hike. Order out of chaos, depression, inflation, create the panic and rape the nation. Order. Crisis creation. Incite black and white. Program agitation. Well, we're all dancing to the drums of uproar, right? Clinton's preparing it for another huge pack. Hike. Order out of chaos, depression, inflation, create the panic and rape the nation. Order. Crisis creation.